swallowed a scream, turned and fled back along the forest path, with Anthea and Cyril running behind. Robert, whose turn it was to carry the lamb, brought up the rear. The lamb was screaming with delight. But it wasn't the lamb that Jane heard. In her ears thundered the patter of hundreds of bare feet, belonging to several hundreds of hungry cannibals. "Into the sea!" she gasped. Cyril and Anthea paused on the water's edge. There were basking turtles on the sand, but no cook, no clothes, and no carpet. "Look!" said the phoenix. Cyril and Anthea turned, and there, a little to the west, was a head. A head they knew, with a crooked cap upon it. It was the head of the cook. The people from the huts were now also gathered at the water's edge, and all were pointing with interest, not at the children, nor even at the delightful lamb, but were pointing at the head of the cook. "What on earth are you doing out there?" Robert shouted. "And where on earth's the carpet?"
"It's not on earth," replied the cook happily. "It's under me, in the water. I got a bit warm sitting out there in the sun, and I just says, I wish I was in a cold bath, just like that, and next minute, here I was."
"Excuse me," said the phoenix's soft voice, "but I think these people from the hut want your cook." Anthea went pale. "They want to eat her." "Hardly," rejoined the bird. "They wish to engage her. I advise you to beach the carpet and land the cargo. The cook, I mean. You can take my word for it. The people of these southern shores will not harm her." The children splashed into the warm water and at once got hold of the corners of the carpet and towed it slowly through the shallowing water and at last spread it on the sand. The cook, who had followed, instantly sat down on it, and at once the hut people formed a ring round the carpet. The tallest man spoke in a language which only the phoenix could understand. "He says they wish to engage your cook permanently as a queen." "Well," said Cyril, "there's no accounting for tastes." "It seems," continued the phoenix, "that they have no choice, for there is an ancient prophecy that a queen should some day arise out of the sea with a white crown on her head, and, well, you see, there's the crown." It pointed its claw at cook's cap, and a very dirty cap it was. "That's the white crown," it said. "At least it's nearly white." Cyril addressed the cook. "Would you really like to stay? Or if you promise not to be so jolly aggravating at home, we'll take you back to Camden Town." "No, you don't," said the cook in firm, undoubting tones. "I've always thought what a good queen I should make. If it's only a dream, it's well worth while." Some of the hut people now advanced from the forest with long garlands of beautiful flowers, white and sweet-scented. "Well, so long," said the cook, getting heavily onto her feet. "No more kitchens and attics for me, thank you. I'm off to my royal palace, I am. I only wish this dream would keep on forever and ever." The cook picked up the end of one of the garlands, and the children had one last glimpse of her worn, elastic side boots before she disappeared into the shadow of the forest, surrounded by the hut people who were laughing and singing as they went.
"Oh, do please let's get home," said Jane. The lamb was furiously unwishful to be dressed in his warm clothes again, but Anthea managed it by force disguised as coaxing, and he never once whooping-coughed. Then everyone took its place on the carpet, and Anthea said, "Home!" And in one whirling moment, the carpet laid itself down in its proper place on the nursery floor. At that very moment, Eliza the housemaid opened the door and said,
"Cook's gone. I can't find her anywhere. You'll have to put up with cold bacon while I slip out, see if they know anything about her at the police station."
But nobody ever knew anything about the cook any more, except the children, the phoenix, and the carpet. Mother was so upset at losing the cook, and so anxious about her, that Anthea felt most miserable, as though she'd done something very wrong indeed. But at least the lamb had not coughed since their return. It was on Monday morning, very early indeed, that Anthea woke and suddenly made up her mind. She crept downstairs in her nightgown, sat on the carpet, and with a beating heart wished herself on the sunny shore where you can't have whooping cough, and next moment there she was.
"Well, here you are again," said the cook, directly she saw Anthea. "This dream does keep on."
The cook was dressed in a white robe. She had no shoes and stockings and no cap, and she was sitting under a screen of palm leaves. She wore a flower wreath on her hair.
"Are you happy?" asked Anthea.
"Love-a-dup, yes," said the cook queen. "I'm teaching them the cooking, and they're teaching me the language. It's quite easy to pick up."
"Then you don't want for anything?" Anthea asked earnestly and anxiously.
"Not me, except if you'd only go away. Long as this dream keeps up, I'm as happy as a queen."
"Goodbye, then," said Anthea gaily, for her conscience was clear now. She hurried into the wood, threw herself on the ground, and said, "Home," and there she was, rolled in the carpet on the nursery floor. "She's all right, anyhow," said Anthea, and went back to bed. "I'm glad somebody's pleased. But Mother would never believe me if I told her." Which, of course, was quite true, for no mother could ever believe in the phoenix and the carpet.